Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you wish for.
Good evening, everyone. Yes, indeed. Let's get started. And we have a special guest tonight. Len Adams is in the house. So stay tuned and enjoy the show.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Let me introduce to you my guest, Len Adams. Len Adams is the co-founder of Phantoms Paranormal. He has been investigating things that go bump in the night for well over 23 years. He is also a public speaker, author, historian, actor, tour guide, and of course, husband, father, and grandfather. When Len is not spoiling his granddaughters, he can be found in Lebanon, Illinois, whether he's on the stage at the Looking Glass Playhouse Community Theater or simply at a board meeting. He might also be found down the street at the Mermaid House, where he is the home's caretaker and Secretary Treasurer of the Lebanon Historical Society. He and I had a wonderful discussion tonight regarding some of our most haunted and most interesting experiences, and I think you're going to find him to be rather entertaining. So without further ado, please welcome my guest, Len Adams. Well, hello, Len, and thank you so very much for being on the show today.
I'm happy to be here. Oh. I'm happy to be anywhere, actually.
I'm happy to have you. Oh, my goodness. You're probably the most interesting guy I've ever met in a while, and I thought that we would have you on the show because you have a lot of experience in investigating the paranormal. And I just think that our listeners and our viewers will benefit greatly from some of your stories. So let's all start from that beginning as usual here. And the very first question I'm going to, of course, ask you is, so where did it all begin for you? And how young were you when you first started realizing that you may have had some interest in this field?
You know, I always made fun of this stuff. I always, this is something that Universal did. It made monsters and had movies. And then this was going back to 1979. Our daughter was born in April of 79. My father-in-law lived out in the country with his second wife. And my wife and I would go for a weekend, you know, take our daughter, little baby daughter, and we would spend the weekend in this old farmhouse.
Oh, cool.
that They had, and then my father-in-law, you know, Saturday nights, we'd all have a few beers and they'd be telling about strange things happening around the house. Well, I thought they were full of beans. Mm-hmm. And then one weekend we were there, it was Saturday night, everybody went to bed. Now, my wife and I would sleep in the pull-out couch in the big living room. The living room where they used to lay out the bodies back in the old days because they didn't have the funeral parlor.
Right.
So, and our little daughter, Megan, was in the bassinet. Well, one night I wake up around 2 a.m. and I have to use the facilities. Mm-hmm. So I get up and I have to walk through the kitchen. The bathroom is off the kitchen. So I do my business and I'm washing my hands and I look up and I swear there's, I don't know if it's an Amish or Quaker looking gentleman standing behind me that I can see in the mirror. Okay. Well, I turned around quickly because the wall's right behind me. There's nobody there. I look back, he's there. I look back behind me, nobody. Then I look forward, nobody's there. I'm like, holy cow. So I walked pretty quickly and I jumped into bed, was right up against my wife, and she goes, not now. And I go, no, that's not it. And I told her what happened. And then we heard footsteps upstairs. Nobody's upstairs. Nobody stays upstairs. And then we heard them come down the steps and stop at the foot of the bed. Well, I saw that gentleman several other times. I had other things start to happen. And I started paying more attention. And it came to a head with that farmhouse. My father-in-law had moved to Phoenix. There was a fan that was in one of the windows upstairs. And he said, if you're going to get it, you got to get it by such and such a time. And I, watching all the Hammer films, why do they wait to kill the vampire like 15 minutes before the sun goes down?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to get to Oakville, which is where this was, in plenty of time. And I got there and I run into people I know and we're jibber jabbering. Next thing I know, the sun's going down. And I thought, I got to get to that house. So I did, and I just looked up at it because I was having these experiences. I thought, let's just run in, get it, and get out. So I let myself in through the back porch, through the kitchen. I go through the other room, hit the staircase, and I announce loudly, I'm just here to get the fan. Leave me alone. Mm-hmm. I don't know who I was talking to. So I ran upstairs and I thought, I'm going to pull this out of the window and get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
And I ran and I grabbed it and I went to run back with the fan, pull it out. My father-in-law has screwed it in with 6-inch screws into the sides. I about broke my wrist.
Yeah.
So now it's like, I really want this fan. I'm more cheap than I am afraid.
Yeah.
So I get out my Swiss Army pocket knife and I get the little screwdriver, and I'm the whole time trying to get these screws out of, looking around me the whole time. Every now and then I'd look behind me, the door would be closed to the bedroom. Then it would be open. And then I said, just keep going. Mm-hmm. And I finally got it out. I slammed it down. I ran downstairs and I got outside and I got to the car and I go, oh my gosh, that was intense.
Yeah.
Then I realized I hadn't locked up the house.
Oh, no.
So I have to go back in. You know, you're responsible. I got to go back in. So I go in and I left the key in the kitchen. So as I'm reaching for the key on the kitchen counter, the faucet came on and the water started. Pardon my hands. I talk with my hands. But the faucet started shooting all over. And as soon as I turned it off, then I hear the faucet in the bathroom going, yeah, and I hear the toilet flush. I saw it. Well, my father-in-law is going to have to call a plumber because I'm getting out of here. So I ran to the to the door. You go from the kitchen onto the back porch. I threw the door open, and it's a good thing I was looking down because they had the storm doors,
yeah,
for the storm cellar.
Mm-hmm.
You were just past that door. If I hadn't been looking down, I'd have stepped out of the kitchen and gone right down into that cellar. Well, I saw that and I threw those doors closed, pulled it down, locked everything and ran out. And after that, I just could not deny that something was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then a little bit after that, I met Troy Taylor and I thought, this guy knows a lot about this stuff. And he had written a book called Haunted St. Louis. And in it, he talks how violence leaves an imprint behind. And one of the gangs of St. Louis that he featured was the Hogan Gang, the Irish gangsters, my great-great-uncles.
Oh.
So I thought, this guy knows as much about my family as I do. But my wife and I went on his tour. We hit it off, became real good friends, and I ended up doing tours and stuff for him now.
Interesting. Let me jump back just for a second with you. How old were you when you saw that not Amish, but that Quaker looking type person in the mirror?
79. I guess I would have been 24.
All right. So
I was born in 55.
The only way you could see that gentleman was in the mirror, though, because when you turned around, you didn't see anything, right?
Correct. And that was the first. After that, I did see him, and not just in a mirror.
Oh, then you started to visually see him, literally, like your eyes all of a sudden just adjusted to the situation wherever you were.
I didn't have to adjust. You know, at the conference where I met you, you're mm-hmm. standing right in front of the table. We see mm-hmm. each other just as solid as could be. Mm-hmm. When my father-in-law was leaving to go to Phoenix, I was helping him break some furniture down. Mm-hmm. And I was up on the second floor of this farmhouse, and I'm kneeling down, taking a bed frame apart. Mm-hmm. And I hear my father-in-law walk up the steps. It's a really nice spiral staircase that comes up. Mm-hmm. And he came up, and I even see his legs right at the bottom. And I'm still in front of me. I'm still talking. Why are you not answering me? And I looked up, and it was this Quaker-looking guy.
Wow.
And I'm like, and he was looking at me like he wasn't too pleased. He wasn't going to hurt me, but he wasn't too pleased I was there.
Interesting. Did you own this house though? You
no,
or
my
your
father-in-law?
Family? Yeah, he owned
it. My father-in-law owned it. Yeah.
All right. Now let's go back further. I have to go back further because sometimes I just feel like these things just do not develop in your 20s. Did you have any occurrences at all that you can remember being sensitive or any kind of an empath younger than age 24?
It seemed like I would feel emotions stronger than some of the people around me. And then once I was, back when I turned 19 is when Illinois changed their beer and wine. You could have beer and wine at 19. And I think I used the beer to, it kind of calmed things down so I wouldn't have to feel all this stuff.
Yeah.
I've gotten away from that.
Yeah. Well, sometimes we need a beer once we see this stuff. So, you know, I'll tell you, it can be quite life changing to realize that you can actually see something that is or is as solid as you and I standing there. And then all of a sudden it just kind of dissolves or disappears or whatever. And it really does a loop. It really does a mind loop, I'll tell you. So now you've had these experiences and you're like, interesting. And you've met Troy Taylor and of course, who has a little bit of history on even your own family background. How interesting about that. So what comes next? So now what happens?
Well, Troy, I noticed Troy is the tours in Alton were very, very popular, but he never had anybody that helped him. He had the History and Hauntings Book Company, his bookstore there at the time. But I asked, I said, would you mind if I came up and helped you? And he said, oh, sure, that would be great. So I went up, and then that's where I met my buddy Crazy Steve, who I've done some things with. And Steve and I would help, and we were the caboose, the people at the back of the line, so we don't lose anybody along the way. And I did that for several years for Troy. And then in 2004, he was going to be leaving Alton, and he asked if I would do the tours for him. And I was really honored. And he said, well, don't get a big head. You've been doing them from the back of the line for 3 years. You might as well move up to the front. So I started doing the tours and leading investigations and doing my own little thing on the side, but doing all this stuff for Troy, and got to go to a lot of wonderful places because of it.
So let's talk about one of those wonderful places here. So I want to, now we've all had, and I usually, when I talk to my guests, everybody seems to have that defining moment. The moment where either it changes your life or it scares the living bejesus out of you, or you find it so intriguing that you have to absolutely have more. So let's go back a little bit here and talk to me a little bit about one of your defining moments, whether it be scary or it just absolutely fascinating or whatever. What were one of those moments for you like?
Oh my gosh, it's hard to really pick one.
I know.
I'll tell you, one of the biggest, most incredible moments, it was in, I think it was June of 2005. My wife and I went on we were looking for ghosts in England. And it was a trip that some group had put together, and Troy Taylor was supposed to be the paranormal expert on this thing. At the last second, something happened that he couldn't make it. So now we're on a trip with me and 13 women, and one of them my wife. So, and everybody would come up to me like I was in charge. And, you know, but we ended up, so everything was good, but I kind of didn't get to really look at things like I wanted to. And then we ended up, Chris Stevens joined our group. She had put together all the haunted locations for MTV's Fear program back in the day. And so, anyway, Chris directed us. We went to Tintern Abbey in Wales to see the ruins, and then we were going to stay at a castle. It was a dark and stormy night. I mean, it really was. It'd be pitch black, and then boom, you could see everything. And you don't realize how mountainous Wales is. But we ended up at this castle in Swansea, Wales, Craigienolles Castle. And we got there, and it's 9 o'clock. We were supposed to be there at 6. The weather is just raining like crazy. The people at the castle couldn't have been nicer. They had food waiting for us and everything. Well, I got done eating quickly, and then I ran upstairs because, you know, of course, first thing we do is plug in all our stuff to make sure everything is charged up. So everything was good. And then I came back down, and for some reason, I thought my wife was back out at the van that was parked out in the courtyard. So I opened the big front door and I look out, and there's a young girl, about 10, 11 years old. It didn't dawn on me at the time. Her clothing was much, much older, turn of the century, and she wasn't getting wet in the rain. And she's looking at me, and all I could do was feel this, can I come with you? It was so sad. And just then I hear a noise behind me, and I turn, and it's Kim, my wife. And I look back, and the little girl's gone. So I told her, I told my wife about this. And then we went on a tour of the castle, and we came to find out that the little girl had lived there at the turn of the century and had been physically abused and killed by a gardener. And so I thought, holy cow, that is who we saw. We just got here. And, I didn't realize at the time, none of us were together. All the people on the tour, we were scattered throughout this castle. Mm-hmm. My wife and I got the bridal suite. It wasn't fixed up very well, but we were there. No TV, no electric clock. You had a wind-up clock and all that. And I think I had one adult beverage when we were done with the tour, and that was it. We go back, 2 a.m. Kim takes some cold medicine. She wasn't feeling that well. She goes to sleep. I'm checking everything. And I started to hear the voices in the room. Uh-oh. And it's like that. Kind of like very quiet cicadas. And then I would go to one part of the room. It was a massive room with a big bathroom off of it. You go to one corner, and then the voices would stop, and they'd be somewhere else. And they eventually quit. And I started getting out my equipment, and everything that I had said it was fully charged, but nothing ever worked. Yeah. And so the voices would come and go. And then I turned off all the lights, and I thought, well, let's go to sleep. We're in the highest part of the castle. We got a big old mountain behind us. We don't even have any kind of drapes or anything on the windows. There's nobody but the moon and sheep going to see us. And so we got a little bit of sun, the rain had stopped, the moonlight's coming through. And we're in a huge king-size bed with the headboard up against the wall. So as I'm staring across the room, I looked up into the corner where the wall meets the ceiling. And I have to use my hand. There's a small, about the size of a volleyball, black mist that's going back and forth like this. And as I'm watching it, it's starting to grow. It eventually got about 3-4 feet across, maybe a couple feet high. And then I watch it move all across the top of the wall. And I'm watching this, and it got to the other corner. A ball of light, the size of like a softball, came shooting out of the floor straight up and intersected with this black mist. It was kind of a big, bright thing like that. And then it was all gone.
Yeah.
And those kind of things, your eyes see it, but your mind's not accepting it. Again, equipment's not working. And the whole time I'm hitting Kim, wake up, wake up, wake up, won't wake up. But she's breathing. I did check on her.
Let me jump in for a second, because I want to add to your story. First of all, my husband never wakes up when I have my experiences. That's the kind of the running joke with when I have my own experiences, he's always sleeping. Okay. When you described the mist in the corner, I'm going to jump in on that one. I was in, I don't know if it was Wales or if it was Scotland. It was one of those where I was in a very old castle as well. And I was in a very haunted room. And my equipment, it was all charged up and ready to go. And all I did was open up the viewer on my video. And all I had to do was press play. And I saw before me, I kid you not, three ectoplasm-like mists kind of floating and dancing about, just like what I'm doing right now, kind of floating and dancing about right in front of me. And I hit play. And I was talking to them like, hi, how are you? Oh, nice to meet you. Oh my goodness. Cause you can't see it with the naked eye. Right. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, long story short, what was really fascinating with this too, they didn't turn black and they didn't turn into the lightning ball type thing. But what they did do is they expanded out, kind of like expanded out. And then they went, all three of them went right through this huge solid door that was our bedroom door. Okay, well, they came. I looked at my camera footage and there was absolutely nothing. It was all wiped clean. And mm-hmm. So everything that I had was it, because they came towards me. It kind of was weird. They all came towards me like this and then they backed up, they expanded, and then they whooshed out of the door, but they came back. They came back around about 1:30 in the morning, and I wasn't feeling very well. I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was a flu bug or it was something to do with them. They like to hang out in the bathroom, but anyway, they're playing with my computer, and I had my computer on, so it was going winky wonky, winky wonky, winky. It was making all kinds of weird noises, and I was so mad. I got up and I pulled the cord from my computer. And I said, you wouldn't let me videotape you before. I'm certainly not going to let you do anything then. And then I told him to get the bejeevies out. Now, the thing is the next day when I was at another type of castle thing, I do not know to this day if I had food poisoning or if they were angry with how I treated them. But I was so ill that we didn't think I was going to get out of the country. It was that bad. So I'm going to put this back on you for a second and just ask you a question about that. Have you ever, in that experience that you had, when you actually saw the lightning or the ball lightning go up, and then of course the mist and the black mist and all that, were you able to differentiate good from bad from that? Or did you just think it was whatever it was curious? Let's start with that.
I couldn't tell. If there was a good and a bad, there was no feeling either way.
Yeah.
And just watching most of the mists and stuff that I've seen were more grayish or whitish.
Yes.
This was the first black one that I had seen. And so I was more like, what in the heck, and observing. I wasn't making any judgment calls.
Right.
And then somebody brought up I read somewhere that some people think when you get like those balls of light that shoot up and intersect with something and then everything disappears, they're thinking that might be the possible opening to a portal.
Yes, I can add to that. I can add to that for a second with you. So in my own house, when I was very, very, I just had a major surgery for cancer, and I was sleeping, and I had a caretaker over watching me. She saw that. And so in my own house, exactly as you described, zoom, she said, I just saw something shoot when I woke up. I just saw something shoot up by your chair out there. And I believe that that is exactly right. Or at least I would agree with you, because I haven't seen, but I've heard of those similar things. So
yeah, that was the only time I've seen that or had that happen. And again, right afterwards, I'm trying to wake Kim up. No, yeah. Equipment working, but not charge, not working.
Right.
So I thought, well, what's next? Well, yeah. I shouldn't have said that out loud, because the voices started and I could hear movement in the room. And eventually the voices got so loud. It's like, I could not believe Kim wouldn't wake up, and it was starting to hurt my ears, and I can find no excuse for any of this. So I thought, well, the heck with it. I'm just going to lay here, see what I can do. So I lay down on my side, and my head was pounding, the voices, and all of a sudden I had the feeling this bed is moving, and the bed was coming up on its, here, I got this thing. If this is the headboard against the wall, it's laying, I'm on this side, it's starting to tilt up.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, oh my, and I go to move to look, and I can only move my neck and my head. I'm frozen. And as I look off the foot of the bed, the wall is starting to turn. It looks like it's just slowly turning. And I got the impression it was like a bank vault door. And when it opened, I wasn't going to be happy with what was on the other side. So I closed my eyes again, and oh, this can't be going on. It's like Rosemary's Baby. This can't be happening. And then I opened my eyes, and now I'm starting to slide. The bed has turned so much, and the voices are just beating horrifically in my ears. The wall's turning even faster, and I don't know if I yelled no out loud or just in my head, but I closed my eyes and as hard as I could, and I opened my eyes, and everything was back the way it was supposed to be. Now, this is the scary part. I'm running around through the room, under the bed, out in the hallway, in my underwear, trying to find out who set me up, who was doing this, could find no explanation till later in the morning. I went down, and I was supposed to meet somebody down in the kitchen area. They were going to give me a map of the castle so I could find everybody else. So as I'm waiting for them to get the map, I look on this sideboard, and they had people would write down their experiences in the castle. And this only happened to one other person before and one other person afterwards. In that particular room, all that stuff happens. And when that wall quits turning, this old hag comes floating through, and she floats past the bed and then disappears into the wall by the headboard. But she leaves a feeling so bad in the room that they say you want to kill yourself.
Oh my God.
So fortunately, I was able to stop, but I got a description of this woman, and I told Kim, and that's the woman she saw the night before when we were on a tour through the castle. I was going to go up a separate staircase, kind of leaving the group, and Kim grabbed me and pulled me down, and she was just staring and shaking, pointing up, and she described the old hag that comes through this room. She was evidently up at the top of the stairs waiting for one of us to come up, like, come on up, I'm going to hurt you bad.
Interesting. Is she, is Kim, she's your wife, is she also, yes, sensitive as well?
She was like her grandmother. She sees things all the time, but most of the time she's puts up the wall so that she can deal with day, you know, life on a daily basis.
Yeah, I know, that's putting up that block. And I've tried to learn to do that myself and ignore half the stuff that happens to me. Is that castle over, did you say, was that in Wales or which?
Craig Enos Castle. Okay. It's in Swansea, Wales. What's it, the Brecon Beacons Woods or Forest or whatever, southern Wales, right in the middle there.
Fascinating. I've been over in a handful over there. And I described to people when I first went over to Europe to do investigated type work just by myself. You know, my husband was always along for the ride kind of thing. I always wanted to know whether or not the hauntings over in Europe were much different or stronger or more dramatic than what I had been experiencing over here in the US. What would you say? Because you've done a significant amount of tours and, you know, investigations, and now you have something to compare it to. So what would you say? Because that, to me, Europe to me wins hands down, but that's not always the case. What do you think?
Well, I've been physically attacked in America, but I've also been physically attacked in England. Yeah. So, and the one in England was pretty, you know, we always say never leave the group. Yeah. Well, I'm always the first one to leave the group because I'm trying to do video and everybody's taking flash pictures and all that stuff. Yeah. And, and so we were at, the Ancient Ram Inn.
Okay.
In, I think it's just south of London and that. And we had just got there right after a BBC film crew was leaving. So the energy was stirred up. So we get in there and of course everybody's taking pictures and so I separated from the group and I went up into the possession bedroom. That's the room where everybody gets possessed. Of course, we hadn't heard that part of the tour yet. So I go up there. He's got black, red curtains and the whole thing. So I got up there and I'm just looking around. So I go into the far corner of the room and I just kind of knelt down by one of the beds. And I said, okay, can somebody do something for me so I can get a picture? I had the video camera. I saw it with the video camera and the viewfinder. I recorded it and I saw it with the naked eye. A ball of light about the size of a tennis ball appeared on the wall. It slowly moved over and it goes to the fireplace and then disappears. As soon as that happened, it's like somebody grabbed a wad of my hair here. Yeah. And it slowly, everything was slow motion. It went straight up.
Yeah.
It came straight down. And then it's like somebody grabbed my hair and just yanked me right down to the floor. That's when I jumped up and I went running out. Well, I ran into everybody else then, and that's when they said, we're going to go into this room. Oh, this is the possession room. This is where people get attacked. But the cool part was he talked about a witch's ball that I didn't know about. And he was going to show us a witch's ball that he had. And he goes, it's right in here. And I'll be darned if he didn't pull the exact brick out of the fireplace and pull that witch's ball out where I saw that ball of light disappear into.
Interesting.
I thought, wow, I got to pay more attention.
No, you got to ask yourself, you're obviously a very strong beacon. Did anybody else go into that room and did anyone else have an experience that you know of?
Everybody else was in that room, but nobody in my group had an experience.
Why do you think that is? Do you think that you and I glow a little bit stronger? Because, you know, I have experiences wherever I go. It's not like I'm always asking for them. But it's like, you know, I'm always curious about it, or my radar inside of me goes on a little bit stronger. Do you have a radar inside of you that goes on a little bit stronger?
Yeah, I think so now. It was years ago at one of our conferences. This was when we held it in Decatur, Illinois. That's where I met Kelly Weaver. Kelly Weaver is a psychic medium, dear friend, lives in Pennsylvania. But it's the first time I had met Kelly. I knew about her. So while there was another speaker, I'm out at the vendor's tables. I went up to introduce myself to her. So I put my hand out and I say, hi, I'm Len. And that's as far as I got. She takes her hands and slaps them on my face and pulls me real close. And she just stares into my eyes. And she goes, honey, you got it. And you better be pretty darn careful. So I, like she explained, it's like the flame to the moth. Yeah, some good bugs are going to come in, but some bad ones are going to come in too. So you just have to be ready for it.
You know, the thing with that, the bed tilting and all that stuff going on in that room, I don't know if I would have been able to physically handle remaining there. Although I did talk about, this one happened in, I think it was Wales. You know, I've been to so many places that I can't often remember, but the cycling mirror. You know, gotta have the haunted room. Wouldn't give me the most haunted, gave me the second most haunted room. which was my life-changing event of how I look at all of this now, even as a mini investigator, I would call myself, because I don't dive into this stuff like I used to anymore, because that was my ultimate, most scariest experience, was to be in a dread. Have you ever been in a room where it feels so dreadful, just kind of sick? You know, and you're just like, oh, the air in here, the whatever's in here just feels so heavy and so yucky. Well, that's what this room felt like. And many things happened in that room, but it was at the point where the mirror went cycling around. It was like one of these floor length mirrors. And I just thought, oh God, I hate anytime I see one of those. And I have, I just look away because I just can't even fathom it. But anyway, I don't know to this day if it was an entity of some sort that wanted to scare me, wanted to prove something to me, wanted to show. But it was when my husband threw the holy water is when it started cycling around and around and around. And he froze in midair. He froze. And people are like, how could he freeze? I said, because he sleeps through my events. They freeze him. I'm sitting here terrified with what's going on before me. So I want to ask you the question, what are your thoughts about, because this mirror stuff really has me intrigued. You could see the Quaker gentleman in the mirror, couldn't necessarily, then you saw him, okay. I put a black mask over my eyes. I could not bear it, but I went into such a panic attack in that room that I thought I was going to die, literally. And I made it to morning, and then I got dragged back up there from the manager. She wanted to talk about this mirror that keep hitting its maids in the butts every time they try to vacuum. You know, I don't know if it's trying to be funny or flirtatious, but anyway, what are your thoughts, Len, about mirrors? Because there is four of them in this room.
Supposedly, now what I've been reading lately, if you have more than one mirror in your room, especially if they're facing each other, you're opening up a portal. So I just kind of make sure, okay, things aren't like that. But for whatever reason, I don't like walking past a mirror. Not because I've gotten old and fat, because I'm always afraid there's going to be somebody looking at me that I'm not going to want to look at. It was just 2 months ago, we were investigating a house in a community close to mine. And I said, okay, I'm going to walk through the upstairs. And I walked into the master bedroom. They had a massive floor-length mirror and really wide. The thing was huge. I stepped in the room. I saw that. I go, oh, hell no. And I just turned around and left. I let somebody else go up. I just didn't want to. I don't know. Just gives me the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah, that was the first thing I noticed when I walked into that room. When I walked into that haunted room, the first thing I did is it was like someone took their hands and turned my head to the left. And I stared at that mirror and I said, I don't know why I'm looking at this mirror, but there's something about this mirror that really bugs me. And this is what's going on through my head. And yes, there were four mirrors facing each other. And yes, in the morning, the wardrobe was open. And yes, it hovered over me. And yes, it sat on my knees. And yes, I could feel its ice coldness against my body. But it actually felt good because I was in such a panic attack. I was burning up just from fear. And so bottom line is that I agree with you. I can't even fathom looking at mirrors anymore. Anyway, but let's move this. So what has been, you've been doing a lot of tours and some personal investigations. Have you ever run into anything that you couldn't manage or handle? Like people always want to know about demonic activity or demons or things that throw them down the stairs or whip them against the wall or whatever the case like that. Have you ever run into anything so, except for in Europe there, unusually powerful here where you thought, nah, this is out of my league?
Yeah. Let's see. I'm trying to think. Oh, it's a quick snip at this house with the full length mirror. When we were doing, I had my friend Luke with me when we were doing the initial investigation interview with her. Luke's talking to her, asking her the questions. So I had this really cool app, Ghost Tube apps. I really like those. And I had it set up on the coffee table. And I said, well, I'm just going to see if we're alone. And I asked, is there anybody with us now? And it goes, Satan. And I go, And I go, F you, you're not Satan. Who am I talking to? And then it goes, demon. And I go, come on now, who am I talking to? And then it said, like, shut up or whatever. So I turned it off, and it comes out, that's the house where we came across our first demon.
No kidding.
Yeah, and now our definition of demon is something that's never been human. So I've been doing this for close to 25 years and then was interested before then, but this is the first actual demon, I would call it. And then, you know, early 2000s, around 2006, I came across an elemental spirit. Yeah. But it's just one and one, and that's been it. I mean, some bad things. I've been physically... The Mineral Springs Hotel in Alton. Mm-hmm. I had a group a year ago this past July from Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and they had rented the place and they wanted us to give them the tour. And I said, okay, we'll do it. And I was there with my buddy Crazy Steve. We call him Crazy Steve because he'll march off in the scariest locations on his own. Then he comes out of the dark and scares the heck out of us. He doesn't mean to, but anyway, I march to the gates of hell with Steve. He just going first. But anyway, so we got this group, and they had some kind of issues and travel issues. Only three or four of them showed up. So we had three or four of them and Steve and I. So I'm giving a tour of the hotel, and we went up to the second floor, which I don't like, but I got a couple stories. So we're in the back room, the gangster room, and they call it because that's where they think a lot of the local gangsters back in the day would congregate. So we're talking, and okay, guys, they're looking around. I'm standing there, and I could feel the room start to change.
Okay.
And it wasn't going to be good. So I thought, okay, we got to leave. But I said, hey, guys, let's go downstairs and get our toys and then decide what we want to do. And I turned and bam, I got hit just about around in the heart area in the front. It was like three talons, two up and one down. And it was digging into my flesh. And I yelled and I dropped and then I got up. All I could think is, get out of the room, get out of the room. Okay. Steve's there behind me. Are you okay? And every time I tried to stop to say something, it would dig in even more. And it didn't let go until I got down to the main level and I collapsed over a table. Steve said, what happened? I go, something got me up there. Where? And I lifted my shirt and I was raked from over my heart to clean across my back, the three... And it looked like a bloody mess. Have you seen these bloody mess without bleeding?
Yeah.
We call them spiritual wounds because eventually they go away. But they saw that and it's like, holy cow. But and I was scared to go back up. But I found out who did it. Doing Estes Method and some EVP sessions with my friend Lisa Crick. And we found out who did it. And I go, that a-hole. I know who that is. And now I protect myself, especially against him. And he's upset, but he can't hurt me. If I don't let him, he can't hurt me.
Was that that's in Mineral Springs Hotel, right?
In Alton, yes.
Was that wasn't when I was there with you. I mean, I wasn't with you, but I mean, I was at that conference where I met you.
No.
That was a different time.
This was in July before.
Oh, really? A year before? So
yeah, a year before.
Does this thing hang out in there? Is that what it likes to do?
Well, this particular entity, he didn't die there. He goes there because his wife died there, and he goes there to, he was a real jerk in life, and he's the reason she killed herself, and he goes there to torment her.
Interesting.
Yes.
Interesting. I want to ask something about those scratches. So you're like maybe the second or third that has had, I would call, penetrating scratches on your body. Did you monitor your body after that point to see, did you have to put something on those scratches to not get infection, or did they just all of a sudden after a period of time just kind of go away?
Because these guys had paid whoever to be at the hotel, mm-hmm. and I was there to lead them through, I stayed. And all I did was I told Steve, we'll just keep an eye on this. And I put my shirt down. We were there for another 3 hours.
Oh, God.
Now, it was still a little sore. But when I started to leave, I lifted my shirt. You could hardly see anything. Now, it hurt when I was home. But it finally, When I got up in the morning, it didn't hurt at all.
Interesting.
That was the second time I've had something that intense. I had one across my throat once.
My God. So do they leave any kind of a scarring, or do they just completely disappear like you've never had it ever to begin with?
Completely gone so far.
Mm-hmm. Here, interesting.
Knock on wood.
Yeah, I was gonna say, start knocking on wood, because I'm, you know, if you have that conference again in Alta next year, I presume you're going to be up in probably in Mineral Springs again doing some kind of tour. Now, the night you were, I don't know if you're doing a tour there the night that I was there. I was down below you in what we call, there was a seance going on at that time with those guys. And then in another room at the same time, whatever was going on, it was a past life regression with Sherry.
Sherry Brake.
Yep. And I had her on the show and stuff. And so, in fact, I can't remember. I think she leads off season three, where Len here is going to end season three. So that's, yeah, the lead off.
That's fitting.
Yeah.
It's gone downhill.
No, it hasn't gone downhill since then. But, you know, she was talking, because I was asking her about, what did you experience in your room that night? Because she said, you know, there were some really weird things that went on in the past life regression workshop room. And I said, yeah, it's kind of interesting. I said, because I was monitoring what was going on in when I was attending the seance. I said, at the same time, all these things are going on. I can't remember, Len, were you doing, I know there was a tour going on. Were you doing a tour at the same
time? I was at the McPike Mansion.
Oh,
I do the darkroom sessions down in the old wine cellar.
Okay.
And they'll have to rip those from my cold, dead hands, because I love going there.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wanted to do that, but it sold out really quickly. So, yeah. What did you have any experiences that night at the McPike Mansion?
Oh, the second night on Saturday. I don't know if you remember, we had that huge thunderstorm that came in and stuck around.
I was sitting in it in a parking lot, where sheets and sheets and sheets and lightning was practically hitting the parking lot on top of us. And I said, we're not going anywhere. We're just going to sit right here. And so, so that would have been a wonderful backdrop for this. So what happened on that night?
Well, I knew the storm was approaching, but I didn't start till 9 or 10 o'clock, one or the other. And everybody was there except for the people who had signed up. So I said to Sharon Lutke, who owns the place, I said, Sharon, because we had moved our presentation. We usually start outside and then go to the wine cellar. We had everything in the wine cellar because we knew the storm was coming. Yeah. I said, why don't you go down? We'll take everybody down and I'll wait out front here for the four stragglers. So we got everybody in the wine cellar and I walked back. I just got to the just outside the front porch and the skies opened up. Mm-hmm. So I ran on the porch and I'm sitting there, and that's where Miss Lydia resides. Miss Lydia was Henry Guest McPike's mother.
Okay.
She didn't die there at the house, but she's there and she's the matriarch. So that's where she is most of the time in the front. So you're always very respectful. I have everybody say hello and thank you and all that. And so I'm sitting up there. So I just started talking to Miss Lydia. And all of a sudden, as you mentioned, the rain, it was starting to hit me up on the porch. And I said, oh my God, I'm getting soaked. I wish I could get in the house. Scout's honor, that front door unlatched and opened up about 3 feet.
By itself.
I can't say I didn't pull on it beforehand. I assumed that it was closed and locked because that's what Sharon said, but I don't know that for a fact. But the timing was perfect and it opened up, and I thought about it, and then I thought, no, because nobody really knows where I'm at. You know, I said, thank you, Miss Lydia, but I have to stay out here to watch for the other people. But thank you. And I pulled the door shut. I knew it was locked then. The other people never showed up. I ran to the wine cellar. I'm soaking wet. I shook myself off. And then I looked around the room and I go, it was a dark and stormy night. I said, I've been waiting years for this. Just to start.
You know, Len, I've had a door open up on me in just outside of St. Louis in a in a small town called I call it Numel. Some people call it Numeli, or something like that. And my great aunt on my grandmother's side is buried in this cemetery there, mm-hmm. but they have two churches on the property. And let's just say that I was in company. I don't know if it was her or somebody else, but there was a tour guide of me on the day that I was there. So I can attest for the fact that that whole area seems to have a lot of activity around there. But I was walking I have a voice, an app that gives me words. And very intelligently, so I know when it's bullharky or if it's mm-hmm. something that's a direct hit. And so this thing was telling me, believe it or not, kind of the history of where I was heading to with this church. And so I know sooner, and I have this thing of opening up elevator doors anyway, but without touching them. But the door just smoothly, just as if it knew I was coming, politely. Oh, someone held the door for me, and I walked in, and I just said, thank you. And it wasn't the wind or anything like that. And I thought, oh, my God, how would anyone ever believe a story like this? So you're having that experience, especially with the latch, just kind of confirms that sometimes these things can happen and they're not always a coincidence. So what other things have happened to you like that? You've had
your elevator reminded me of something funny. It was couple of years ago, the last time Kim and I were at the Crescent Hotel mm-hmm. there in Eureka Springs, Arkansas. She went to do something, and I said, well, I'm going to go up to the top because I'm going to go up to see Jesus. You know, way across the valley, there's this 150-foot Jesus that's standing out there in the woods. But that's where the bar is. So I said, I'm going to go up and see Jesus. So I get on the elevator, and I'm up there. I didn't go to the bar. I went out, and I'm just standing there looking at all the beautiful forests and everything. And I swear there was a couple next to me, and the lady asked the husband, she was looking at Jesus, and she goes, I wonder if they take that down, him down in the wintertime. Big 150-foot huge metal statue. Yeah. And I thought, it's time to go. Yeah. So I got on the elevator. I'm on the fourth floor. I want to go to the first. The elevator wouldn't let me off.
It would not let you off.
It would go to different floors. It would stop, open up just a little bit, and then close, and then start moving again. It held me on there for about four stops before finally it got to where it must have got cocky, and it opened a little wide on the third floor, and I was able to stick my hands where I didn't think I'd get crushed, and I got out. And then I walked down the steps the whole time cussing the elevator.
Would you say that place was relatively haunted after you experienced that there?
I would say that it is, just, and I have not seen a thing there, but I get some really intense feelings in different areas. It's like, this doesn't feel so good.
Yeah. There's, I mean, you pick up things like I pick up things, and, sometimes I ignore those feelings and then I soon come to regret them. But the thing is people would not always sit and want to, you know, oh, you're paranoid, or oh, there's a malfunction. Or I've had so many elevators open on me throughout, ever since I was like 20, probably around 28 to 32 years old. And then always I was in this, historical building, we'll call it, because it would upset him if he heard me call it haunted. But anyway, this hotel in Baltimore. And I was talking with the manager, and he was very upset. I had asked him if his hotel was haunted. And of course, that's the wrong thing to ask these people. No, it's got a lot of history. And this is the history, blah, blah, blah. There is not, he said, there is not a ghost in this entire place. I kid you not, as God is my witness. I turned and I looked at the elevator, and there was nobody coming down. There was nobody coming up. There was nobody. Okay. And it flung open as if someone was trying to prove a point. And I just looked at him and I go, okay, we'll just ask the ghost if he or she agrees. And I got in the elevator and I said, thank you. But I have stuff like this happen to me all the time. What kind of things happen to you most frequently, Len?
I'm hit with the emotions, but it's rarely a really super high. It feels good. Most of the time, it's like I'll just get hit with this incredible sadness.
Yes.
And every now and then, it's like, oh, this does not feel good. We need to get out of here. I need to get out of here right now. I was at the Valeska Axe Murder House mm-hmm. with Troy Taylor and a couple other people. There was like six of us. Mm-hmm. And we had been through and doing things together. So everybody was out. It's 1 a.m. Everybody's out behind the building. They had fixed up the barn so that people could get out of the house and have a nice place to sit. So they're all sitting. And I said, I'm going to go back in. So I go into the first floor bedroom where the Stillinger girls who were visiting were killed. So I'm just sitting on the edge of the bed. And, you know, people bring toys and they set toys around for all the kids. Most of them, not the right time frame, but it's besides the point. So I'm sitting kind of cockeyed because I don't want to look at the mirror that's on top of the dresser and all the toys are stacked there. So I'm looking more towards the closet. And as soon as I turned and looked at the closet, this wave of fear came over me because mm-hmm. I was trying to talk to them before that, if they would like to talk to me and stuff. And it just kept growing and growing. And I didn't realize I was shaking. I had tears running down my face. And it was, I didn't want to look towards the dresser that was by the door. Something was coming. That's all I knew. And it was going to be really, really bad. And finally, I turned to the side and amongst those toys on the dresser, you know, the little wooden blocks that the babies with numbers and letters and stuff, the blocks are stacked on the dresser and they say, hi, Len.
Oh, my God.
I saw that and it like I like snapped out of whatever was happening. And I thought, OK, I can. Okay, that's good. Hello, I got to get out of here. And I did. And I just got out of the house and I thought, how cool was that at the end? They made contact. So I went and I was telling Troy and the rest of the people. And all of a sudden I go, wait a minute, which one of you guys did that to me? And they all swore, and I know these people, and they swore to a person that they didn't do it. So I believed them. So here I am. I'm cock of the walk now, boy. They stacked blocks up to talk to me. So an hour later, we're outside and this car pulls up and a young lady gets out and she goes, hi, how you doing? Oh, we're doing great. Who the hell are you?
Yeah.
Why are you here at 2:30 in the morning? And she used to live in the house when she was younger and she cleans the house now for the current owners at the time. She goes, I was just on my way home from such and such. I thought I'd stop by, make sure everything was okay. And we're going, yeah, it's really great. So we wanted to talk to her. Did you experience anything? She goes, no, I've never experienced anything, but I still talk to them as if they are there, whether they are or not. And people leave all these stupid toys, but sometimes I like to leave little messages. Like today in the bedroom, I wanted to say hi to Lena. I stacked up some blocks and couldn't find the letter A.
Oh, my God.
That's why it says Highland. Everybody's staring at me. I couldn't find a hole big enough to hide in.
I think that that's absolutely hilarious. But it is possible that these things can happen, too, because you hear of these things happening where people are having messages written to them on their cell phones all of a sudden mm-hmm. or computers or back in the day, maybe a typewriter or something like that. So, you know, I mean, just imagine if you would have left there and this person never would have showed up and would have told you about that. Can you, I mean, you would have, honestly, I would probably would have believed this story.
Yeah, would I have been at fault? We would not have known any better.
No, but just the whole idea that she went and did that and then you noticed it. And mm-hmm. not only that, synchronicity, coincidence, you know, here's Len walking into a room that says, hi, Len, even though it meant hi, Lena, but very, very interesting stuff there.
And I never noticed it earlier in the evening.
Yeah, well,
I don't know.
That's the other thing. Have you ever been in a situation where one moment you could have sworn it was one way and another moment it was another way? I mean, I've been
in those
situations and you're like, your head plays a lot of games with you. You think, I must be going crazy, you know? But yeah.
A lot of entities stack chairs behind me so that when I turn around, I fall over them.
Really?
Yeah. I've had that happen many times.
No kidding.
Or a door that was open and I grab something, I turn around, now it's closed, or it slams in my face, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, the slam in the face kind of thing. That's a lot of power right there. I've had them locked on without a lock on the door, not open, because they're proving a point to my husband. That was at Litchfield Plantation when he said, bring it on, ghosts, as soon as we got on the property. And I'm telling you, they brought it on. But he was not a believer at the time, but he believed by the time we left. So, well.
Have you ever had things like with the doors, this will happen and it's physically impossible, and yet it just happened? Like the heavy metal doors, they'll have it like a church or a school, and they got that real heavy hinge at the top. You can't slam that door to save your life. And yet twice I've had those doors slam in my face.
Yeah.
With witnesses.
That's a lot of power behind all of that. If you think about it, just imagine the amount of energy. If they can do that, can you imagine what else they could possibly do? That's the part that I think to myself going, well, maybe they're exhausted now because they expended their 5 seconds of powerful energy and now they're tired, you know?
Let's hope so.
Yeah. Well, I could honest to God talk to you forever. We'll have to have you back in the late future. I tell that to everybody because it's like, I always like to find out what people are up to next and all that. But Len, tell everybody how they can find you or get if they want a tour in one of the places that you do, how they can get a hold of you. What kind of
information? Well, the tours in Alton, you can go online and look up Alton Hauntings. Make sure it's the website put together by Troy Taylor. If it says any kind of psychic thing, that's not us. Look for the Troy Taylor authentic thing, and it has our tours, our investigations. And I think a lot of those have gone up, should be going up if they're not up already. The tours, especially the bus tours, they fill up right away. So you need to jump on these if you want to go. I'm not pushing it. If you don't want to go, that's fine with me. This isn't a cult. But if you want to go, and hopefully that's why I try and have something for everybody. But if you're looking for an investigation, I live down in Belleville, Illinois, and so Southern Illinois. We're about 25 miles southeast of St. Louis, but my little group on Facebook is called Phantoms Paranormal. And our email is phantomsparanormal2000.
Check them out, everybody. Thank you so much, Len Adams.